CRJ230, this is your podcast for week number 5. In week number 4, we looked at competency and what was expected of people who take a witness stand, raise their right hand, and are called upon to give testimony in a trial. In particular, we looked at Illinois criminal trials, and we focus on Illinois criminal trials and criminal cases throughout this course because that's part of the course name and objective. But also, there's a higher standard of proof there. There's also a greater opportunity for loss, jail time, as opposed to paying some money. But the same expectations hold true on the civil side of the courthouse, just so you're aware, and I think we've made that comparison several times. So I asked you to read Rules of Evidence, Illinois Rules of Evidence 701, 702, and 703, and then there's an article on the CSI effect. And then in particular, your assignment this week is going to focus on distinguishing between opinion and expert testimony. Now, some of you, especially those of you who intend to go into law enforcement, are going to be called to testify in cases. Anything that you're involved in, potentially, you would be called to testify if that case gets to a hearing or trial. In doing so, in most cases, you are going to be giving, at a minimum, your non-expert opinion, but in a lot of instances, your expert opinion. For instance, if you end up being certified or specialized in a certain thing, I have a friend who was a police officer, became a detective, eventually ended up in the crime lab, and one of his specialties became blood. Gathering blood, making sure blood, the chain of custody was maintained and blood was properly tested, and then testifying about blood, human blood. You can take DNA from that and anything else. I had another friend who was very good with fingerprints. They were experts. They had extra training, education, and experience. And then they were people who had knowledge above anybody else. Any of us can give opinion testimony. To sort of, distinguish that a little further, if you were to be exiting the Peoria campus after a class at Poplar Hall and you were intending to turn northbound on University, so you'd have to cross traffic to get into the northbound lanes, and you're waiting for the cars to give you a break, and several cars were traveling what appeared to be higher than the speed limit. They were speeding down University southbound. You could give an opinion about, your belief that they were traveling faster than the speed limit. Could you say that they were traveling faster than the speed limit? No, but you could give an opinion based on your observations of the speed of other traffic, your experience in driving on that road, maybe some other factors. If you were a police officer who was trained in accident reconstruction, and there was an accident at that same location based on a car traveling higher than the rate of speed it should have, and you're trying to determine if, in fact, that car was traveling at a speed higher than it should have, you could determine speed by several factors: the debris, the impact, skid marks, tire marks, and other factors, potentially. Your testimony in that instance would be as an expert. Lay trial witnesses have to give answers that contain only facts that they observed. They have to testify about things that they observed. They're not supposed to render opinions as a general rule because the function of the jury is to evaluate the evidence and develop opinions and conclusions regarding factual matters at issue. But as a practical matter, lay witnesses often offer opinions. Something as simple as telling the jury what the color of the defendant's shirt appeared to be involves an opinion concerning that color. Practical necessity has dictated that exceptions to the rule excluding opinions had to be recognized. As a logical proposition, many items of evidence that seem to contain facts actually contain opinions to a greater or lesser degree. The statement of a witness as to the height of or how far away the defendant was from the witness may be an opinion rather than a clear statement of objective fact. If we're in the same classroom, I would have done an experiment, and you can run this experiment in your own house, with your friends, any location. Pick an item in the room. Pick a doorway, piece of furniture, a person. And then ask two or three individuals who are at the same location in that room as you are, approximately the same location, to write down how far away in feet and inches that person, that thing, whatever the object may be. And see what sort of responses you get. They will very much be opinions. A lot of people struggle with distance, with determining what distance something may be. If they don't have a background in it, if they don't have experience doing something in their day-to-day jobs or activities where they have to measure distance, they don't have practice measuring distance with the naked eye, they may be all over the place. Somebody might say 50 feet, somebody might say 20 feet, somebody might say 4 feet, and the number's actually 8 feet. It's just human nature. Same thing with the height of somebody. And even sometimes the color of their shirt. Now, this is different than the opinions of an expert. The rules of evidence I ask you to review and the cases you're going to discuss this week, they will note that we treat expert witnesses different from lay witnesses in part because expert witnesses offer opinions covered based on their respective areas of expertise. An expert witness isn't someone who was at the scene or witnessed or saw whatever it is that they're going to testify directly, okay? Whatever they're going to testify about, they didn't see that directly. They saw it after the fact. They saw it as their role as an expert for a particular thing. So an expert has to be shown to have education, training, knowledge, skills, or practical experience that enables him or her to form a given opinion and then testify about that opinion. Expert witnesses are not occurrence witnesses. Most opinion witnesses, lay witnesses, are occurrence witnesses. Expert witnesses form their opinions based on the information and evidence collected and provided to that individual. Their ability to do so is set by a foundation that requires the person offering the expert witness to establish that the person has those credentials, that they're credible, competent, able to provide the expert opinion they're sought to provide in the witness chair. A lay witness, on the other hand, A lay witness could testify that the vehicle in question appeared to be traveling at a greater speed than the other vehicles on the roadway just prior to the accident. An expert may be called to testify that based on tire marks, debris patterns, conditions of the vehicles, conditions of the roadway, the vehicle was traveling in excess of the speed limit. You know, to go back to my prior example. Legal studies students, you know, one day you will be looking at lay witnesses or lay opinions that may be available from occurrence witnesses. And you'll also likely be involved in helping to find and retain expert witnesses in criminal or civil cases. If you're heading into one of the criminal justice related careers, and especially law enforcement, you're likely to be called to give an opinion testimony that isn't of an expert nature, just based on what you observed. If you were someone who observed in your duties an occurrence, you saw the crime being committed, you saw parts of things leading up to it. Those are opinions as to what you thought might be happening until you know what did happen. Or many of you will be called to be experts. You will arrive on the scene after the fact or be involved in some way in the case after the fact. And your opinion will be based on prior education, training, and experience in that particular thing you're called to testify about. Example of fingerprints, say. Having some exposure to the expectations of these areas of the law and the roles that they play is an advantage for all of those future experiences. So, you know, really take this in and do the work to understand what lay opinions are and what expert testimony is and how it's different. On the part of the reading that I asked you to take in, that article on the CSI effect, the main point is here, and we'll continue to note this point. Most cases are proven primarily by tying bits of circumstantial evidence together. Now, those of you that are in, or those of you who had criminal law, I'm sure you have noted the various scenarios as to how different elements of crimes are presented and tied together by circumstantial evidence, is a, you know, for the most part. Sometimes we have science like DNA, and DNA is great. It's wonderful when it applies, and especially if it brings a case to a close. But DNA doesn't apply, and it actually doesn't even exist in the majority of the cases that you're going to be involved in. So be aware of the impact and the burden that the DNA effect, that the CSI effect, that the science of investigating effect has created for prosecutors, and especially with juries. And know that this just means that it's more important than ever that, especially for you people who are going into law enforcement, tend to go into law enforcement, that you step back. You go into a situation being very intentional about your role at that part of the case. Are you the first officer on the scene? Well, then make sure it's secure. Make sure that you have the people separated, the potential witnesses, the victim, the perpetrator, potential perpetrator. Make sure that you follow Miranda and all of those things. Make sure that you're doing your part there. If you're the investigator, make sure that scene remains secure. Make sure that you have enough help to keep it secure. Make sure that you don't have too many people in there digging around and messing up the scene, contaminating the scene. Make sure you follow chain of custody. Make sure you get the help of the experts you need to process various types of evidence, and then communicate with the people who are gathering the potential witness statements, etc., to make sure all that's done. It's all tied together. So it all goes together. But know, and hopefully by this week you've kind of figured that out, most of the cases that you're reading, you know, occasionally if it's one of the, it's a murder case, it's a sexual assault case, is something like that, yeah, DNA is going to, if it's available, going to play a part. And that's about as good as it's going to get, right? To tie the defendant to the act. But you're not going to have DNA in a common burglary. And you're not going to have a lot of scientific evidence, per se. You may have markings on the door that was pried open that are consistent with the pry bar that was found on the person you believe is the burglar, the defendant in the case. And there is probably somebody who can act as an expert that can say the marks on this doorway are consistent with this tool. But other than that, most of the evidence, most of the case are going to be proved by circumstantial evidence. And that was the reason to have you read that, so you can recognize and be aware and know the importance of your role. See your week 5 podcast.
I set your alarm for 5 p.m.
Siri just set my alarm for 5 p.m. Thanks, Siri.
Your 5 p.m. alarm is already on.
You're always being listened to. That's another evidence consideration. I appreciate your efforts the first 4 weeks. Spring break's going to be on us real quick. So keep up the energy. Reach out with any questions regarding, this week's topic, anything regarding the course, anything regarding the careers or the programs. Know that you probably should be looking for an announcement that you can start making appointments with your advisor when you do get that opportunity to get that in. As a reminder, this summer, Administration of Justice, CRJ 227, is offered online. And the internships, legal studies internships, and the CRJ 201 internships, where you can get real-life experience working with law firms or police officers or probation or whatever. So consider that, because those are, some of it's your required course, but for those that it isn't, it's a great opportunity to see firsthand some things that you may want to see and get some real life experience and know that this is or isn't the path I want to be on. Otherwise, if you need me, you know where to find me.